Hey!
Hey, look at that. We're
recording. Look at that. That worked first try.
All right, we like it. Okay, welcome to the Red Phone Zone, where we don't know what we're talking about. With you, as always, I am your host, Aaron, and this is going to be your weekly source for your gaggles of geeky goodness. And with me, as always, is this guy looking at the camera. Say hello.
Hello, my name is Shay.
Well, hello, Shay. How have you been?
Doing all right. Trying to figure out what's going on with the technical difficulties that we've been having, but we seem to be recording and broadcasting now. Let's see if we can get it to go the entire hour.
That would be great. That would be great. So why don't you explain to them why we're choosing to do this a second time?
We had a really great show last night out at Super Nerd Night, but we lost over half of the show. We got a 15-minute segment, a 5-minute segment, and like a 4-second segment somehow, even though we recorded for 2 half-hour segments.
Right. See, my thing about it is I don't know what happened. I kind of, you know, I'm honestly leaning on that it was a combination of the computer and the fact it was a public Wi-Fi.
I think the public Wi-Fi probably had something to do with it.
It probably did.
I think that we, you know, we lost the data stream at some point, and it just it just dropped it and cut it at that point, which is nice that it did it at all instead of not doing anything and just dropping, you know, instead of doing nothing, it did at least capture some of what we were doing.
Yeah, I mean, it did do that. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and do this again, and Shay and I were discussing it a little bit earlier, and we are going to... we're not going to try to fake you guys out and recreate last night's show. We're going to discuss what we discussed, but we're not going to pretend like, you know, oh my gosh, that was a great choice. I did not know that was coming.
Yeah, we had this whole setup, and it worked out so well, and I really wish we could have seen it where we actually... We had talked about casting Batman and Son and hadn't discussed it with each other. We talked about doing the casting, but hadn't given each other our choices. So we were as surprised as anybody watching, and we're not going to try and pretend like we're surprised about the choices that we picked
because
we talked about them last night.
Yeah, my thing about it is a casting couch from now on. We're going to keep it in that. We're going to be keeping it in that vein to where we don't know each other's choices. But, you know, tonight's going to be a little bit odd because, you know, because of the difficulties, we're just going to discuss the choices and seeing if, like, a little bit of time has made it, you know, maybe made these choices weigh on your head a little bit more. I know one thing I'm going to regret about this show is Amber's not here. You know, she did add, like, a third Democratic, you know, error to the whole show. And it's too bad she's not going to be here, but she's got work, she's got school, and it was amazing of her to make it down here anyway.
Red Phone Girl, we miss you.
We do miss you. I mean, you're a fantastic addition to the show and a better art designer than I could ever dream for. So thank you. We miss you. We'll see you.
Yeah, that's right. For those who don't know, our Red Phone Girl, Amber, is also our Red Phone Zone artist who made the logo and has also made the flyers.
Keep getting coffee on my nose from this stupid cup.
Well,
yeah, I'm a new coffee addict. I've been drinking an awful lot of coffee lately, but man, oh man, it's probably better than all that Dr. Pepper I was drinking.
Less high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
So can't decide whether to look at the camera here.
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to decide. Yeah. Honestly, it feels most natural to look at you. Yeah. And for some reason, I find myself gravitating towards looking at the screen. I don't really get that.
I'd almost want to shut that down.
Well, we don't want to do that.
No, we want to be able to see the status. Right.
We do want to do that.
Maybe in a perfect scenario, there'd be a producer sitting there watching, you know, camera crew basically sitting in, and so we wouldn't be staring directly at it. Because I think that does sort of, I think we should be looking at each other or at the camera and then just checking on the record as opposed to looking, you know, the first one we did had no camera.
Yeah.
Or Issue Zero, as we were calling it.
Yeah. Well, Issue Zero had, you know, I mean, there was no camera, but there was also zero issues. I mean, it recorded, it went to the site just fine. It was throwing in the camera that really made things a little bit more complicated. And speaking of making things a little bit more complicated, I think we better go right in and go ahead and jump into the casting couch. Go ahead and tell us what that is, Shay.
Casting Couch is a segment that we came up with where basically we decide who we want to play some the characters in a movie based off a popular title. Like in this case, we're going to be doing Batman and Son. That showcases the new. It's a graphic novel that showcases Damian Wayne, the new Batman character, who we both, me and Aaron, both really, really like the Damian Wayne addition to the Batman mythos. And so we picked, I actually have a list right over here.
What we decided to do, well, and we didn't actually discuss this last night, so it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of cool that we get a chance to, you know, kind of do the director's cut of episode one, in that, you know, we never really talked about some things. We decided to cast Bruce Wayne, Dick Grayson, Tim Drake, Talia al Ghul, Kirk Langstrom, and Damian Wayne. Is that correct?
That's right.
And it's something I never really pointed out is, what are we doing recasting, like, you know, like, why are we recasting Batman, but, like, you know, for instance, we're not recasting Alfred or Gordon? And my answer for that was, I was satisfied with, well, actually, truth be told, I wasn't 100% satisfied with Michael Caine as Alfred, but, you know, he did a good job. Gordon, on the other hand, Gary Oldman, fantastic. I thought he was fantastic casting.
I think Gary Oldman, I think, has done one of the best jobs all around throughout the entire series.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. He is way better than old What's-His-Face that played him in the original one. I can't even remember his name. But, yeah, we decided to cast, you know, like I said, all those characters. And so Shay's choice for Bruce Wayne in Batman was George Clooney. Do you want to go ahead and talk about that a little bit, Shay?
I felt that George Clooney had not been given the opportunity to really be the best Batman that he could be, because I feel that he was the best casting that's happened so far. I think that Clooney really has the look and the demeanor and the right attitude to be Batman. And I don't think he was given a real chance to be the kind of Batman that I wanted to see, and I would like to see him go back to the role and take it a little bit more towards the Dark Knight side of things as opposed to the 60s show kind of, you know, pow-zowy things.
Sure. Yeah, and, you know, it's something I said last night, and I'm going to say it again. I think that speaks volumes for Shay's character, that he's willing to give him another shot. Batman and Robin is a pretty hated movie. And the fact that you would give somebody another chance out of that, I think it's, you know, I think it just shows how good of a person you are and how forgiving you are, really.
Thank you, Aaron. Well, I when I first saw that Clooney was going to be Batman, I was really excited. I was like, yes, George Clooney, he's great, he's perfect.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went to holy rusted metal Batman, and I was just like, oh my God, no, please stop.
Yeah, yeah. You know, geez, I don't even know when that movie came out. It seemed like it came out when we were like seniors in high school, 97, 98, something like that. And yeah, I was pretty excited about Clooney as Batman, but I was kind of thinking more along the lines of his character of, oh, what was his name? Richie Gecko in From Dusk Till Dawn. You know, he's a really, really, you know, badass, horrible, mean character, but, you know, I knew that he had the acting chops to pull it off.
And I always think of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah,
when
yeah.
I think of George Clooney, where he plays, you know, he's on, you know, most people know him from ER, where he's a doctor and very intelligent, whereas you then have the character in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, who, while as intelligent, is not a learned person, and he really looked like somebody who probably could barely read his own name.
Once again, this is Shay being a super nice guy. His character, what was it, Ulysses Everett McGill, he was a dumbass. I mean, he was not smart. And George Clooney has talked about his Coen brothers' roles in the past, about how he always just kind of plays a dumbass. And he does. I mean, he played him in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. He was in, that awful, awful one. Intolerable Cruelty. Without a doubt, my least favorite Coen Brothers movie, and he was an idiot in that, too.
You know, I don't think I've seen Intolerable Cruelty.
I wouldn't bother. I mean, I loved the Coen Brothers, hated that movie. And then he was also in Burn After Reading, and once again, he was a dumbass in that. So, I mean, he kind of, I don't remember his exact wordings, but I've heard him make jokes before about how he's, you know, that's his dumbass trilogy or something like that. But, you know, all that being said, you know, George Clooney is a deserving Academy Award-winning actor. He won for Syriana. Year escapes my head. I think it was 2 years. Yeah, it wasn't last year, year before. Very good role. He was nominated for a best actor. Or excuse me, best... he's been nominated for... He's actually... I think he's up for Best Actor this year for Up in the Air, but he was nominated for Best Director for Good Night and Good Luck, and which was another fantastic movie. Really good movie.
I just don't make it to the movies as much.
And that's just it. It's like, you know, for me, some of these movies getting Academy Award nominations are the only thing that's going to get me there. But a little bit more back on topic, my choice for Batman Bruce Wayne was Clive Owen. And those of you that don't know who he is, he was the main character in Shoot 'Em Up. He was in the movie that really put him in my mind for the role of Bruce Wayne, which was... I don't remember the name of his character. It was Dr. Dan something or other, but he was in Closer. It was an ensemble piece. It was based off of a play by the same name, and it also starred Natalie Portman and Jude Law. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Natalie Portman, and I'm surprised you haven't seen it since you're in love with her.
She's one of my favorite actresses, actually.
And rounding that off was Julia Roberts. And like I keep telling you, I don't want to ruin the movie for you, but I mean, he is a very Machiavellian role. I did the exact same thing last night.
Machiavellian?
No, I mean, I keep on flubbing on that word. He was a very Machiavellian character. And, you know, he's also very physical. I think that he can pull off both well. You know, if I heard that, you know, they decided to, in Christopher Nolan's universe, they decided to recast him, Clooney, I wouldn't be upset. I just think that Clive Owen is, you know, he was who came to my mind. And we threw it out there last night. Like I said, it was more of a democratic process because we had Amber here as a tiebreaker. And she agreed with the Clive Owen choice a little bit more than Clooney. But, you know, and, you know, I wouldn't be upset. You know, actually, I was happy with Shea because he didn't really give me any... choices that upset me. We'll get to it in a little bit. After that, we did cast Dick Grayson, and your choice was?
My choice was,
Gyllenhaal.
Gyllenhaal, yeah, Gyllenhaal. I have a horrible head for names, actually.
Yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal.
I have a list of it right here on my computer, deal.
And if I remember right, you weren't really married to that choice.
No,
you're just all like, he looks about the part, and he's about age appropriate.
Yeah, and I kind of
You could have just as easily said a Tobey Maguire or somebody like that.
Yeah, and I'd say that I kind of like your choice better than after having heard it.
And who was my choice? Milo Ventimiglia. I don't know how to say his name. I'm not even going to pretend like I do. He's Peter Petrelli in Heroes. He was in Gilmore Girls. He played Rocky Balboa's son in the Rocky Balboa movie.
First place I saw him.
Was it? First place I saw him was Gilmore Girls. But, you know, he certainly looks the part. He's got the charisma for it. And he's got the I think he's got the physicality of it as well. And I mentioned last night that I have heard rumors that he is trained in Eskrima, which is fighting with those sticks, those little sticks like Nightwing does. I don't know if it's true or not, but I definitely think he looks the part. He is a little bit too old. I mean, when I think of, and that's what we're, you know, there's really no nailed down age here. You know, I think of Bruce Wayne, I like to think, early to mid-30s, I think of, you know, at least in terms of the Batman and Son. I mean, obviously there's always other age differences. But as far as Dick Grayson, I think somewhere between 25 and 30. And I think Milo is, I think he's probably older than me and I'm 30. So he's probably like 32, 33, something like that. And same thing with Jake Gyllenhaal. But he might be, I think he's a 28, 29. So, you know, your choice might be a little bit more age appropriate.
You know, I think that they're both excellent actors. I can't think of specifically something that I would pull out of my mind that Jake Gyllenhaal's done. He came to mind as being somebody
didn't like.
Right off the top of my head, I can't.
Can't think of a movie Jake Gyllenhaal's done.
I'm just not. Brokeback Mountain. Okay.
I've seen it. The Good Girl.
The Good Girl. I don't think I've seen that either.
Yeah. You haven't seen Brokeback Mountain? I should show that to you. It's a very good movie.
I mean, I cast Jake Gyllenhaal based off of
physicality.
Yeah, he looks what I think Dick Grayson looks like to me.
Sure, and you know he could pull it off. I'm not saying he can. I just I went with Milo, and I wasn't particularly married to the choice, but Amber, our tiebreaker, you know, went with Milo as well. So I mean, that's what we're gonna choose.
I think that's and that's what's gonna go on the website when we put up the
right once we get that thing running.
Yes.
All right.
Should happen anytime now.
Yeah. And then after that, we casted Tim Drake Wayne. And I think that's one that actually went in your favor. You chose Daniel Radcliffe, if I remember correctly.
That's right. I chose Daniel Radcliffe as being somebody I think who could do... Again, he kind of looks, in my mind, like Tim, and he also has shown that he can really do a solid character. And you know, I haven't seen him in anything other than the Harry Potter movies, and I don't think he's done anything other than the Harry Potter movies, at least not since he started doing the Harry Potter movies.
I can't say if he has or not. I know that he got... I mean, before he did the Harry Potter movies, he was he played David Copperfield in a the Charles Dickens story.
Okay.
Excuse me. In a TV show of that, like a made for TV movie, he did
in England, right? BBC.
I can't say.
I would think probably. So. I mean, he's English. And probably they cast him in England.
Right. Well, you know, that's true also, and. What else was I going to say? That is true. But movie-wise, TV-wise, I'm not really sure of anything he's done since then. I do know that he was in a stage play, and it was called Equinus, and he got rave reviews for it. He played I believe he was a homosexual, and he had a fetish for horses or something like that. And he got really good reviews. I know that he got a little bit of flack from the parents of the Harry Potter fans because he was nude on stage and everybody wanted to go see it. But, right. You know, he's an actor. I mean, it's unfortunate. You know, I hope that no children went to go see that based off of the fact that, the Harry Potter's in it. It probably did happen. You know, but that's kind of where parents need to come in.
Yeah, parents should be aware of what they're doing. And it's not a Harry, a stage performance is not going to be a Harry Potter spinoff.
No.
He's an actor who's going to be able to do a lot of different roles, including Tim Drake, maybe.
Yeah, well, maybe. And, you know, my thing about Tim Drake, or Daniel Radcliffe as Tim Drake is, you know, he's not a bad choice. You know, like I keep saying, you didn't give me any bad choices. I went with Freddie Highmore, and he is he's actually in a lot of movies. He was in Finding Neverland. It was a movie about J.M. Barrie, the author of Harry Potter, of Peter Pan, and he played the character that inspired J.M. Barrie to write the story of Peter Pan. He was in a Danny Boyle movie called Millions. That was very good. He was in, he was in this movie called, I don't even want to say, I mean, it's some kind of generic title, like Music of the Heart or something. He played a musical phenom. He's in a lot of movies, and he's a very good actor. He's got very good acting chops. I mean, I kind of see him as like, I don't know if I can call it this generation, but he's like one of those new Haley Joel Osments. I mean, he's an actor whose wisdom is beyond his years. I mean, he's pretty young. If I had to wager a guess, he's somewhere between 15 and 18. I mean, he's still a young actor.
And he's been in that many things already?
Oh, yeah. He's been in a lot of movies.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he's a very good actor. I mean, I really enjoy him, but Amber broke the tie and went with Daniel Radcliffe. So, you know, well done, Shay, on that one.
Woo.
Woo, woo, woo. And then after that, we hit, after that it was Kirk Langstrom. And that was one that I was 100% not married to. He was one that I couldn't really come up with. I said, who did I say? I said Guy Pearce.
Guy Pearce.
Yeah, he was in Memento. He was in, he's in a lot of movies. He's one of Christopher Nolan's actors. And I just went with him because, you know, he's kind of got that dark side intelligence. So, I mean, that was pretty cool. I mean, I liked that about him. But, you know, and then you came up with Michael C. Hall, the star from the TV show Dexter, and you erased my choice. I'm going with Michael C. Hall, even though I chose Guy Pearce.
I think Michael C. Hall can really bring that intensity and that intelligence that he does in Dexter. And I've seen him in a couple other things, actually. I think he's in Gamer.
I haven't seen that, but I know what you're talking about. That's
Avatar.
That movie with Gerard Butler, who our one viewer last night was that he was actually his choice for Bruce Wayne. Gerard Butler, and we discussed it a little bit last night. Not to be a jerk, I didn't change our minds, but, you know, we discussed it, and I still stuck with who I went with. What?
Over a little bit, because you're kind of like half-faced.
How's that?
No, just like this.
Move my chair?
Yeah, move the chair over.
All right.
Because we were kind of getting like half of your face there.
Well, we don't need to see.
I mean, you're
this is a podcast.
Half,
this isn't a face cast.
But.
All right. And then after that, we went ahead and cast Talia al Ghul. And I'm not remembering your choice for Talia.
My favorite actress, Natalie Portman.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah, I had a problem with that because I don't really. I have a problem. It's not easy for me seeing Natalie Portman, an actress who's a few years younger than me, having a 9-year-old son.
Well, I mean, she's 28. She's also Israeli.
I know. Well, no.
So she's
only
ethnic,
sort of.
Well, no, she's ethnic.
No. She was born in Israel. She was born in Jerusalem, but she's American. She's born on an army base.
As I understand, she's the right ethnicity,
you know,
for Talia, actually.
I will bow to your knowledge of Natalie Portman, because I don't pretend to know that much about her. She disappointed me in the Star Wars movies, but, you know, hey.
Really?
Yeah, well.
I thought she did a pretty decent
job. She's all right. She wasn't horrible. Don't get me wrong.
I don't think that there were, as much as I'm a huge Star Wars fan, I don't think that Star Wars really came, the prequels really came together.
I like them, but we're not talking about those right now. You went with Natalie Portman, and I chose Rachel Weisz from The Mummy, from The Constant Gardener, and like that. And I chose her kind of based off of her character of, I don't even remember her name, and the second Mummy where she was playing
the evil queen.
The
Nefertiti.
Evil queen. It was a Nefertiti or
a
something
Nefertiti
like that.
Or
Nefertiti. And, you know, I kind of... And, you know, I see Talia as somebody who needs to be worldly, needs to be intelligent, needs to be beautiful, and somebody that we can believe could seduce Bruce Wayne, which is kind of funny because if we're going with Clive Owen, Natalie Portman did seduce Clive Owen and Closer. Yeah, so, yeah. I don't remember what Amber went on. I'm pretty sure she went with Rachel Weisz, though, because she loves Rachel Weisz.
I think she did go with Rachel Weisz.
Seems right. It really does seem right.
Well, I didn't really cast Natalie Portman for anything specific. I cast her because she's one of my favorite actors, and I think she kind of matches up with the image of Talia as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, to each their own. I mean, that I'm not ripping on you here, but I mean that was, you know, what I felt was your
weakest
pick. But, you know, hey, you know, to each their own. I'll cast Christopher Lee in everything if you let me. So I'm going to try to not do that too much. And then our final choice was Damian Wayne, and Shay didn't have a choice, which disappointed me because he was the whole reason I wanted to do this. I mean, he was like the main reason why Shay liked the book.
Yeah, no, the character, I love the Damian character. I think it's a powerful element to add to the Batman mythos. Like, how does Batman deal with a son who is basically everything that he fights against? He's a murderer. He's a criminal. He's an international assassin. And
Halo jumps at the age of 2. I don't know why. That always jumps out of my mind. They said that he did that.
Yeah, no, so Damian becomes, to epitomize the, you know, he is everything that Batman fights against, and yet at the same time, it turns over, and they show you that the sort of the life path of Damian is to come to understand his father's crusade and to come to embrace his father's crusade, which I think is... I think they did that alternate history or alternate future part at the end of the novel that really clarified that.
Yeah, that was Batman issue number 666. I liked that one, but, you know, I mean, you liked it a lot better than I did. The thing that I liked about it was that they named the cat Alfred. I thought that was cool. And he also, there was a line in there about how he conceded to the fact that he was never going to be as good at it as his father, Dick Grayson. And... Even in the books now, he's not respectful of Dick Grayson. I mean, he's still talking shit on him and doing all that stuff. And, you know, he's... I like that part about it. But I ended up choosing for him a young actor by the name of Hero Finds Tiffin. He was in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. He played a young Tom Riddle, Voldemort. And he's got this darkness to him and this intelligence and, like, just this charisma. I mean, this kid's, I don't know, he's probably 12 now because that movie's a few years old. But, God, I mean, he creeped me out. I mean, he really did creep me out. And it's not a coincidence that, Hero Finds Tiffin, because he is Ralph Fiennes' nephew. Ralph Fiennes is the actor who played Voldemort in those movies.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if it's coincidence or what, but it worked out. And I think that, I mean, he's got the intelligence. Like I said, it doesn't really bother me too much that he's a little too old, because Damian would be more mature. he'd be more of a mature person.
His physicality would be more developed, and his attitudes would be more developed.
Yeah, I mean, he wouldn't be like a typical 9-year-old.
Yeah, he wouldn't be talking about Pokemon.
He would definitely have a dark side. He would certainly have a dark side.
Well, he decapitates someone in like his first outing as Robin.
And he ran callously ran an ambulance off the road, off the bridge, and made it crash. But then we later found out it was only the Joker in there, so it didn't matter.
Right, but it's still nonetheless, and he is killing villains in order to try and make his father happy, but without quite understanding why it is that Batman does not kill, why that becomes such an important thing to Batman, and it's a story of him learning how to deal with that. Really, I think these choices and links to our winners. Are going to be on redphonezone.com as soon as it goes live, because it's not quite live just yet.
Not quite.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, we're working on it. Hey, look, we got a viewer now. Hi, viewer.
How's it going?
So, at any rate, okay, now we lost our viewer. Oh, must be shy.
We said hi, and
we said hi, and they ran away. Yeah, okay, so, that's our choices. We'll put it on Red Phone Zone as soon as it's ready. And I guess we're going to move on to our next section, which is our characterization. Could you explain this to me, Shay?
Characterization is a term that I came up with as a dungeon master to describe what a lot of Dungeons & Dragons players do when they, like, say, watch a movie or read a comic book. They kind of think in terms of, like, well, this is a plus 12, this guy's a paladin.
Plus 12 hack master.
Yes, and so I wanted to do a segment here on the Red Phone Zone where I basically do a characterization, kind of like I would just sitting at home watching a TV show and say, oh, okay, I would do it this way, and this is what that is. And in this case, I chose, for our first one, I chose a Green Lantern ring in honor of the real big deal that's going on in the...
DC Universe
with the Darkest Night and the multiple colored lantern cores.
Sure.
And the thing that I noticed as I'm characterizing the Green Lantern ring is that it is not something that could be an average run of the mill everyday kind of magical item. It's definitely an artifact level powered item. Not just for the fact that the things that it can do, in that sense of it's basically that sort of telekinesis, shield effect, attack beams, flight. Flight, and I believe it even has like faster than light speed travel when you're out in the atmosphere, when you're outside of an atmosphere. All these things are very powerful things, and they're all wrapped up together at infinite uses. The infinite uses thing and the recharge battery really does take it even beyond an epic level item into something that would be an artifact in D&D. D&D, of course, being the most commonly played tabletop role-playing game versus some other lesser-known games. And I actually... I thought about it a lot, and like which game system would I put Green Lantern ring into, and how would I do it if I had just any choice, and going outside of the Dungeons and Dragons limitations. I picked Champions, and you said you were familiar with Champions to a certain extent.
Yeah, I played it. It was pretty fun. I liked that.
It's a superhero-based role-playing game, and it has an element in it, a rule system in it called a variable power pool that allows you to switch up what your powers are. Basically, you sort of allocate a certain number of points to your, the ring, and it can be on flight, or it can be on shield, or it can be on teleportation, or it can be a beam weapon, or... with a variable power pool, you can reset what you are using your powers for, and you can redesign the powers on the fly, which is basically what you would need to even come close to using the powers of, to emulating the powers of a Green Lantern ring.
Right. And the thing about the Green Lantern ring, that makes it kind of like a tricky artifact or whatever you want to call it, is that, it's... amongst the most powerful forces in the universe. I mean, it's like the power of will.
And, right.
I mean, And if I we talked about it last night. You said that that the Green Lantern rings and the Green Lantern Corps did actually will everything into existence, like everything, like right. reality into existence.
And specifically, I'm thinking of Zero Hour when Damage, one of my favorite DC characters, actually. Was used basically as the power source for Parallax and Hal Jordan to restart the universe as they were trying to rewrite history, and it was and so Green Lantern Corps is you know the Owens and the Green Lantern Corps are very pivotal to the DC universe. They were there at the foundation of the creation of the DC universe, and they have literally phenomenal and really almost outside of anything other than, say, like a wish spell in a Dungeons & Dragons game. Though, now that I've been discussing it, and actually I didn't think of this last night, but I did just think of this while we were discussing, making the Green Lantern just a cleric or a spellcaster and with a special, you know, a cleric specifically because the ring becomes like a divine focus, which is one of the rules about the clerics versus the wizards. Wizards use, you know, components for their spells, whereas clerics use their holy symbol. And if you were to take a look at Green Lantern and basically say that it's all coming from him and that the ring is just a focus, a divine focus item, you could probably do a reasonable Green Lantern once you get up to, like, 15th to 20th level cleric.
Right.
You just have a select spell list, which is something that I plan on putting up. You know, I'll do these, do a couple different things. Like, I'll have a DC... Or I'll have a an artifact write up and a cleric version write up as well as the champions write up on the website once it gets going.
Well, that's good. I mean, all you Aaron haters out there are probably going to learn to love this section because I don't really have a whole lot to talk about. I used to role play when I was 20, 19, 20,
I think it was about 20,
and I quit because love it or hate it, nobody can disagree that role-playing does attract a certain caliber of people, and that caliber of people are people I didn't really want to be around, unfortunately.
What, like me?
No, not like you, like other people.
I think you were playing with a group that was not as much into having fun as it was about sort of like a...
Yeah. Metagaming, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It also came down to that's when I met my ex-wife, and, you know, I needed to spend time with her. And, you know, that whole situation was, you know, just kind of...
She wasn't interested in playing.
No, the gaming was just kind of stressful anyway, and I was trying to get my life set up and stuff like that.
Well, if I know the group that you were playing with, which I think I do know who those individuals are, I'm not sure they would have been all that interested in bringing in, you know, your wife because they would have.
No,
felt
they're
that,
pretty elitist.
Yeah, it would have like messed with their dynamic, and you know, she's not being a experienced role player, which is something that people who play a lot have a tendency to develop this sort of like, I only want to deal with somebody who actually knows how to play as opposed to being open. And they kind of get a group set and keep that same group for years and years and years. It's almost like a poker night in a lot of people's minds.
And yeah, truth be told, it was only really the one person that turned me off from it. There was just the one. So, I mean, what is it about it that makes it to where it wouldn't really be a very good artifact?
I think it would be an excellent artifact. I mean, if you create it at the artifact level, I think it's, not to mention the fact that it was created by beings who are basically divine, and using the Dungeons & Dragons system, the Owens would have to be at divine rank of some kind. You know, they it's not entire. It's entirely within the scope of how Dungeons and Dragons functions and works normally to say that a deity level character shows up and gives an artifact item to a character. And that I think is really that's probably where I would go with it more than the cleric, because I don't feel that the Green Lantern powers really adjust as the character grows in strength and experience. There's a little bit of more familiarity, but all of the abilities of the Green Lantern ring are basically manifest at the instant you pick it up. It's, you know, there is a certain amount of learning time to figure out how to you know, think and focus and all that. But I think that doing it as an artifact is probably the best way to do it in Dungeons & Dragons, because that's the only thing that's going to really have the power scope that is necessary to honestly replicate the Green Lantern Ring.
Right. I mean, it's definitely a force to be reckoned with. It's really powerful. I mean, I know that I wouldn't feel very comfortable creating it for a game because, you know, I mean, there'd be the people out there, you made that thing too powerful, and, you know, how can you make the power of will, like, you know, too powerful? I mean, really just depends on the person using it.
Well, I think if you were going to be playing a game with a Green Lantern ring in it, you would want to be looking at something where you were dealing with an entire core, like where every player had their own ring. While the green rings are, I would say, more powerful, as I understand, than the reds and the blues and the purple lanterns and the turquoise, or not turquoise, indigo.
Right.
You know, I think that the Green Lantern ring is the one that's indicated as being the most powerful, whereas the Star Sapphire, Lantern Core has that. They're probably the next most powerful, but they have a limitation of what they can affect because they have a focal effect where it has to be someone that they care about. They can do anything. They can do anything in order to defend or protect or help someone that they are in love with. And then whereas the Red Lantern rings are probably the weakest in that they could actually even be maybe just an epic item, because they have defense, flight, and energy beam, you know, and that's really all that the Red rings are getting. The Orange ring, you know, I just wouldn't touch the Orange ring with a 10-foot pole in a game scenario because it's so isolated. As an enemy, maybe, and as an enemy,
that would be fun.
You could do a lot more.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, as an enemy, you can. I mean, a lot of people, you know, may disagree with the fact that. But when with this type of mentality, but when I'm running a game, I'm not so much concerned about making sure that every single, jot and tittle is correct on my NPC character sheets, namely because they're just not going to spend any time on. They're going to be there for a moment and they're going to go away. I want them to be able to do certain things, and I'm not concerned about making them really, really balanced. And the Orange ring just isn't something that would ever end up in the hands of a player, in my opinion.
That would be bad. That would be really bad. Okay, that is Shay's section with the characterization, and I think we've dropped a couple of lines so far, but if you disagree with this, if you have a better idea, please do feel free to email us at redphonezone@gmail.com. We are on Twitter, we are on Facebook, we are on all that good stuff, so it's not hard to get a hold of us if you want to do that, or if you want to go ahead and suggest any topics for the show.
Yeah, if there's something you want to hear me characterize, or a particular video game, comic book. I mean, are we, for Casting Couches, are we considering even just recasting
Absolutely.
A movie?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it's like I keep telling you, I don't want to come up with all these things, but I have an idea in mind about a movie I'd love to recast, but I'm not going to say it because I want it to be your idea.
Okay.
And, you know, I just don't, you know, I've already chose this week and next week's.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I'd like for you to come up with it on your own. But, yeah, I mean, please, 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 I would love Casting Couch ideas because I'm already running out and I've only come up with a month's worth.
Oh, I think we'll when the time comes, we'll be able to pull it off.
Sure,
but it would be really nice to have you guys send some ideas in, because then we feel like we're interacting with the audience and actually, you know, not just sitting here rambling off on our own. We're actually answering some questions.
Yeah.
And we'd love to hear. You know, there's a chat, and this Ustream interface has what's called a social stream. So if you're a friend on our Twitters, you can at Red Phone Zone through Twitter or through Facebook or MySpace. Though it doesn't look like we have the Facebook and MySpace configured yet.
We'll get it figured out.
Yeah, I one of the things that I'm working on along with the website, getting the website functioning.
Okay, our next topic, it's going to be our last full topic on the show. It's going to be a movie review. And for this week's movie review, we decided to We decided to review the latest pop culture phenomenon, Avatar, James Cameron's most recent directorial outing. It is now the number one movie, money-making movie of all time. It's on the fast track to win the Academy Award for Best Picture, which is, you know, like I discussed yesterday, so it's going to feel a little bit less organic, and Mr. Shea will be a little bit less surprised. This is his first directorial outing since Titanic, which also was the movie that was beat out for the most profitable movie of all time, as well as it being it also took Best Picture and Best Director. So, on to Avatar, Shay. What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it. I had fun with it. I thought it was visually absolutely stunning and without a doubt deserves best special effects with no qualifications. I don't think any movie has come out this year or will come out this year that's even going to try and compete.
Eligibility's gone anyway.
Yeah, but yeah. Have we reached that point already?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not familiar with
it cuts off
times.
On December 31st.
Okay, and the thing is that I just don't think, maybe it's just the fact that I didn't feel like it came together as well. I don't think it seems, to me, it doesn't seem to be best picture. Like, it's a really good, really fun, really beautiful, amazing special effects, but I'm not sure if I would say that I felt that it really had the solidity to be best picture.
I'm going to do this to you again, Shay. I did it to you last night. If you're going to say that it shouldn't win best picture, what do you feel should?
Unfortunately, I haven't seen enough movies this year. But I mean, I like Sherlock Holmes better than I like Avatar.
Yeah, I did too. Well, you know, I like quite a few movies better than I liked Avatar. On a grade of A to F, where do you give it?
B.
You give it a B. You give it a B. You're a little bit kinder to this movie than I am. I didn't hate it. I mean, I see movies sometimes that, you know, makes me angry that I've, you know, wasted my time watching it. But that wasn't one of them. I mean, it was a really long movie, and I hate movies that are like 3.5 hours and not engaging me in a movie theater, because I always wind up and going outside and, well, not going out. I go to the restroom and get refills, and if it's that bad, I'll go smoke, but I don't think that's ever happened to me on that movie. I'm going to throw this one out here, is I don't know that it had the best. It probably did have the best visual effects of the year. I do think that the effects are getting a little overhyped. And I say that because I feel that this is probably the first really big mainstream 3D release. I think more people saw this movie in 3D than they did not, and I think a lot of people are jumping all over, oh my god, these are so cool because they're 3D. Well, that's just the technology. It's not necessarily the movie, but the effects are good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bagging on the effects. I think that they're getting a little bit more a little more hype than they deserve. I do keep saying this to people, and I'm not even going to pretend like I coined the phrase, but the movie's Dances with Avatar. I mean, it is the story of Dances with Wolves, but it has blue aliens instead.
Right, it definitely has that feel, except for the fact that at the end of Dances with Wolves, they basically all run away and hide.
Right.
Whereas at the end of Avatar,
this has got a fairy tale ending.
The end of Avatar, the
kind of,
you know, sort of, he becomes sort of the chosen one, the first human who transfers his consciousness into a Pandoran, and I mean, I don't want to ruin, I guess, the ending, but I mean, Jake becomes like almost a messianic figure to the Pandorans.
Yeah, he does. And what did as far as the story goes? I mean, it was good, and the place where I get impressed with this movie is when I'm thinking about the universe. I mean, I think it's a very well thought out universe. I told Amber after we saw it that I would have been tearing that movie apart on a physical scale. There was one line in there about something about if there weren't the low gravity on this planet, then, you know, it'd be kicking your ass or something to that effect. And you know that went a long way to explain to me how they could fall hundreds of feet onto those lizard bird things without getting hurt. I thought the whole thing with the with the head tails connecting to the birds and being able to connect with the live stream was really a neat and unique idea. I felt that, those of you that don't know, I'm I can't say an avid, but I'm definitely a hobbyist archer, and I thought their bows and arrows are really cool. I want one of those.
Really? I was not aware of that.
Yeah, I like to shoot me some bows and arrows. It's fun. But yeah, I like that about it. And I do thought, but if I were the person in charge of deciding if, in the corporation that whether or not these people are just being crazy hippies and saying this land is our land and they're actually being a mental connection, I would have seen that head tail, and that would have been all it would have taken to convince me that these guys are telling the truth.
It seems to me that there was a certain just blind eye being turned from, the scientists were saying things, and, they were hired to tell the people this information, and somehow the colonel, it seems to me that the Giovanni, I mentioned this last night, Giovanni's performance, I think, was the best.
Giovanni Ribisi?
Giovanni Ribisi. I thought his performance was the best. I really felt like I understood his character and his sort of simple goal-oriented mentality, where he wasn't really concerned about this, that, the other thing. He had a job to do, and he wanted to do it as easily and as effectively and as quickly as possible. And he had no hatred or ill will towards the Pandorans.
No.
It was really the colonel who then came in and was basically calling
the shots.
Sigourney Weaver's character, whose name I don't recall.
Oh, hell, who cares?
But Sigourney Weaver,
basically. Ellen Ripley.
Ellen Ripley. Well, he was calling her basically a liar.
Right.
He basically was saying that these kooky, hippie scientists are just trying to, blow up some smoke and mirrors and say this, that, or the other thing about these people when he, as far as he was concerned, they were just, the linkage was something outside of his concept, outside of his conception. And I do think that the link, it really did a good job of saying this story is about technology meeting up with nature, and I think that link item really, really brought that the overall metaphor to a head in that sense of it is the one that organic link to other creatures that the Pandorans have is basically the part of technology that a lot of people are scared of. This idea that you will link something and you sort of lose a sense of self. And the way they cast that into the nature side, that linkage is in the nature side of the equation versus the technological side of the equation, really kind of, I feel, helped the larger metaphor of society connecting, being linking together and, being able to send oneself into another body and being able to share one's experiences with another creature. These are things that are going to be possible with technology, the direct neural interfaces that are being developed right now. But they cast that ability into the organic to kind of show that, it's not where it comes from, but how you use it.
Right. For what it's worth, Giovanni Ribisi's character was named Parker Selfridge. And he is the corporate administrator for the RDA mining operations and one of the film's primary antagonists. I am quoting Wikipedia. So he was your favorite character. And this is, I must be a bad person because the character that I liked the most was Colonel Miles Quattridge. And he was the head of the mining operations security detail. And I don't know what it was about him. I'm not saying I liked him, but he was the character that I don't want to say hooked onto the most, but he was a character that he just caught my attention the most. And I think it's funny that I have this movie where, I don't even know if I think I told this to Shay, and I definitely have told it to other people. We got this movie, it was like these uncanny technologies. We got these big flying lizard things. We got gigantic starships. We got the colonel fighting in a mech. And I got ripped out of my suspension of disbelief when he was fighting Jake Sully down on the ground and his big old mech with the big old machine gun, he pulled out a knife. I thought that was silly. I mean, he could probably pull the lightsaber out, but he pulls out this, it's probably as big as Jake Sully, but, for the size of the mech, it was, I don't know. I just thought that was kind of odd that thing had a knife.
Why wouldn't it have, punch pylons on the automatically or something like. I don't know. I think it almost again goes back to the sort of the organic metaphors that even the kernel, the technological element was drawn down to what amounts to a very tribal. Like he's no longer flying. He's no longer shooting bullets. He's now just right down in the dirt with a knife fighting fisticuffs with Jake.
I do think, you know, that is something that I thought was kind of neat about the end of the fight was the, you know, just kind of the progression of the battle. Because was he a corporal? Yeah, or no, colonel. The colonel was up in the ship and he was leading the forces. And then the Na'vi came in and they got up to the ship. And then the colonel was, you know, fighting him off the ship. Then they took the ship down, and then he jumped down from his mech, and he fought Jake Sully down on the ground in the mech, and then they never did take out the mech, and then he was ultimately killed by, Neytiri, or whatever her name, didn't she kill him?
I thought the Black Death, the giant, the biggest, the big bird, or big lizard, flying lizard killed him.
I thought she shot him with a couple arrows. I don't remember. But, you know, I think that, I don't know.
Maybe she did. I thought
that was kind of a neat progression because, you know, it went from, you're right, and you said it much better, much more eloquently, and much shorter than I did. But, yeah, I mean, it started on this huge technological level and it just got down to throwing down in the dirt. And I liked that. I don't know. It was just cool.
We were also talking about how we feel the, last night we got into a discussion about how we feel that the sequels should go. Did you like my idea about the, you know, we had the same basic overarching point of
my idea is much more smart ass in the way you say it. My idea for the sequel would be the Confederations of Earth just coming in and nuking the hell out of Pandora, because I think that would be what would happen after the strike on the ships and
everything. My thought was that is most definitely the reasonable. I mean, of course we're going to be anti this decision, but it is also at the same time I think the most logical reaction of an intergalactic government that is going to say these people attacked our settlement and drove our settlement off of this planet, and we're not going to stand for that. And I think what they could really do is they could go and they could have the sequel be Jake and Neytiri being embassy of the Pandorans to the human empire, so we can go to Earth and we can see where, you know, human society is, so we can focus in on that, and then have a sort of a political thing where, or maybe even like an assassination attempt might happen or something like this.
On
where,
whom?
On Jake and Neytiri. As they come to try and stop what's going to then happen anyway in the third movie, which is the military response. You know, basically the second one be a, like...
The Empire Strikes Back of Avatar.
Exactly. And then the final, the third one being like, okay, the second one, you know, Jake and Neytiri failed. They were not able to convince the human empire that they were justified in reacting to the, you know, and have disinformation lies on the parts of the corporation, all that kind of thing.
Right.
Where basically we were forced to sit in that position of saying, well, okay, what the human empire knows about what's happening, they're making the right decision. They don't know the truth, and they won't listen to the truth.
Right.
But at the same time, giving them that moral ambiguity of like they just don't understand what Jake and Neytiri understand.
Right.
You know, because you would have really needed Sigourney Weaver's character to come back and explain what was going on, because Jake is, just not the scientist to really to put that out. He's just a soldier, and Neytiri's no more of a scientist than Jake is. She's a soldier too. They're both warriors.
Oh yeah, but yeah, you know, my only, I mean, and this could be absolutely might be a good angle in the movie, but I would have a hard time seeing that the whatever Earth is, the Confederation of Earth, or the Corporation of Earth, or Planet Earth, or maybe Starbucks Planet by that time.
Terran Federation.
Yeah, whatever you're going to call it. Even accepting Jake Sully as some sort of ambassador, because he betrayed him, and he was pretty much the reason why everything went bad. I mean, I can see him accepting Neytiri. I mean, she's now some sort of leader. I guess that would make Jake as well, but
he is due to his sort of, like I said earlier, messianic kind of like he fulfilled a sort of prophecy for the Pandorans, and that automatically elevated him to a sort of a leader position, and also the fact that he's an off-worlder, so he has a lot of that knowledge as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if I haven't said it yet. I mean, Shay decided to give the movie a B. I'm going to go with probably C+. I think I'm being pretty kind to it. Because, you know, it's definitely a better-than-average movie. It's not like every movie out there. It just wasn't made for me. I saw it once, and that's all I wanted to see. You know, I don't particularly want to see it again. I don't really have any interest in seeing it on Blu-ray or DVD or anything like that. And I'm kind of wondering what's going to happen to the DVD sales of this movie, because I'm wondering how many people are out there the same way as me. Like, you know, I saw it in 3D, and that's good. You know, yay, because you can't watch a movie on 3D at home. Well, not yet.
Oh, you can't yet?
I thought
they had that.
Well, I mean, they're coming out with the technology, but, you know, it's
special
still,
TV.
Well, yeah, it's a special projector and a special TV and special glasses, and it's a very expensive thing, so only, like, the, you know, the most elite of the geeks out there are going to have that kind of thing. And I wouldn't buy one right then. You know, I mean, yeah, maybe if it was like $100, because it's better than my...
Just for Avatar? No.
No, hell no. I meant the TV.
Right, if there was other movies...
The TV I might pay $20 for.
There's a movie, an older movie that was in 3D called... There's a couple. Well, I don't remember. I can't recall the name of it. It was in 3D. There's a couple. But there's just not enough movies in 3D. I don't think to really qualify.
No.
Buying something like that, unless you can just have your own private, you know, movie room in your mansion already.
Wish. Yeah. When I'm once Red Phone Zone makes me rich and famous, I'm gonna have my own studio. And in order for us to have a new studio, we're gonna have to do more shows. We're gonna have to get more viewers. And so that's going to almost wrap us up for the day. I do know that, like I said, please give us more ideas on any of our contacts. redphonezone@gmail.com would probably be the quickest. It would go straight to my iPod. On top of that, we are working on getting these things on iTunes. Hopefully we'll have this thing on iTunes tonight, and you can look it up on redphonezone.com. And which brings us into next week. Tell me about next week, Shay.
Alrighty. Well, my characterization next week, which is what I'm interested in, is going to be a Sherlock Holmes, a write-up of Sherlock Holmes as a character in the Dungeons & Dragons system. Brought Final Fantasy VII, casting couch.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. I've been loving that game for... God, what is it, 12 years? Holy crap, the game's 12 years old?
The game is 12
Man.
Years old. I played it in high school.
Oh, I did too. I played it in high school. I got a mono, and I got the game, and I was home from school for a week, and I got to play straight through that game. And, yeah, I love it. I mean, it's easily one of my favorite games of all time. It'll be fun to cast a movie of that.
It's a gorgeous game, and I really think that I'm looking forward to the, you know, we're not going to tell each other what our castings are, because we, like I said, last night we were surprising each other, and we were laughing at the, you know, we were right there, you know, not knowing what was going on, and we want to keep that idea. I think that was the right thing to do.
I do know, I'm gonna throw a little spoiler out there for you. I have chosen my cloud, and man, if anybody watches it, I'm going to get hate mail, and I'm looking forward to it. Because I got somebody that I think is perfect for the role, but... I think he's perfect in the role, but the person's not very well liked.
Oh, really? So yeah. it's somebody who has a sort of a bad
polarizing.
Reputation.
No, they don't have a bad reputation. They just have a polarizing career.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, what was our movie review was going to be? Sherlock Holmes, wasn't it?
No.
No. Watchmen. Watchmen.
Yeah,
that's
it's going
right.
to be The Watchmen. Frank Miller and what's his name? The artist. I can't even remember his name. Who is the artist on The Watchmen?
Oh, it's...
And it's not frickin' Frank Miller. It's Alan Moore
and...
Oh, hell, I don't... Dave Gibbons. Yeah, we're going to be talking about that movie. That's a movie that, you know, once again, I actually have opinions to.
It's a seminal piece of comic book history.
Sure, sure. I'm not going to deny that at all. I'm going to talk... We're going to be... It'll be an interesting review because I think, you know, there's going to be no way of doing this without talking about the book and... You know, overall, what I have to say about it, it affects both. It does affect both. So we got our cast. I'm looking forward to this. We're going to have a casting couch of Final Fantasy VII. I need to start thinking on that a little bit more. We're going to have our characterization of Sherlock Holmes, which I'm looking forward to. I've always been a Sherlock Holmes fan. I've read all the books, and I've seen a lot of the old Christopher Lee movies. Those are fun. Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, great movies. And I love the new movie. I mean, we're not reviewing it, so I can say, yeah, I loved it. I mean, it was a lot of fun, and I was very happy. I still don't know if it's official, but I know that at one point they were talking to the villain, the actor who played the villain, Mark Strong, to be playing Sinestro in the upcoming Green Lantern movie, and I think that'd be a very good choice.
So you think that Mark Strong? Well, Mark Strong would be an amazing Green Lantern.
I think Sinestro. Yeah. It's gonna be what's his nuts? God damn it, what's his name? The guy that's gonna play Green Lantern. Son of a bitch. Ryan Reynolds is playing...
Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds is playing Hal Jordan. Andy, I guess he's going to be playing Deadpool in a Deadpool movie. I know he played him in the Wolverine movie, but they're going to be a spinoff movie also.
Please, God, let them put the mouth back on him, for goodness sake.
I might be screwing myself here a little bit, on a future casting couch session. But if I had cast Deadpool and Wade Wilson, I would have thrown in Mr. Jason Lee. I think he'd be a very good Deadpool.
I completely agree with Ryan Reynolds as a casting for Deadpool. I think he has that motor mouth that is necessary.
Yeah.
Jason Lee has that motor mouth as well.
Yeah.
But I approve. I would pick Ryan Reynolds over Jason Lee. I think he looks a little bit more athletic.
Okay, yeah, well, I'll give you that. Well, I think it's been a good show, Shay. Man, you need to change. Your name is now, Bob. It's been a good show, Bob. Until next week, this is the Red Phone Zone, or we don't know what we're talking about. This is your host, Aaron, signing off.
Bye, guys.